We're in Adygea, southern Russia. It boasts rugged mountains, rushing rivers, and radiant skies. And today, we're gonna explore all of them from the land, the water, and the air.
The mighty Bieloia River is the lifeline of Adygea. And today, we're going to feel its power right up close. So, helmet on, paddle in hand, it's rafting time.
Vladimir, rafting is one of those sports where you're very much competing with the elements. What sort of connection do you feel with nature when you're out in the river?
We're on the Bieloia River, just 100 meters downstream from the edge of the Caucasus Nature Reserve. The water is crystal clear. There's trout living in the river. And today we're going to raft down the majestic Bieloia, a marvel of southern Russia and the Adygea. The river always puts a smile on our faces. Sometimes you can see animals coming down to the river. I've personally seen a bear, a roe, and a deer. There are lots of birds, like heron and ducks. They all live on or near our beautiful river.
Now, we're about to head out on the water. What are your top three safety tips that I need to know before we go?
My top three safety tips? The key thing is choosing the right gear. It must be professional grade. Wearing a wetsuit will help you avoid freezing in cold water. It's recommended in any season. The temperature is about 10 degrees Celsius now, and it doesn't get much higher. A wetsuit lets anyone spend up to 2 minutes in the water, safely. You also need a good helmet and a good vest. And then make sure you obey the instructor's commands. They're my tips.
Got you. And we have our wonderful team of rafters here. How do you decide who does what and where?
People with some rafting experience usually sit up front. Novices sit at the back. But the key thing for any team is to do exactly what the instructor says. The commands are simple. Forward, back paddle, left turn, right turn, over front and over back. That's it.
And this might be a bit of a daft question, but how can we sit on the side of the raft and not inside it? I hope you'll take me with me after asking that.
We sit on the sides of the raft for easier paddling. We use canoe-style paddles, and we sit on the tubes so that we can use our shoulder girdle to paddle forward or backwards.
Gotcha. Shall we do this, Vladimir?
Let's go.
Vladimir, I should have asked this question before we set off. But how sturdy are these boats? What would happen if we got snagged on a rock?
A raft can tear if it gets snagged on a sharp rock. We have sharp slabs along the banks in some places, and they can tear a hole in a raft. It can also burst after a bump if it's overinflated. Otherwise, they're quite sturdy. We have no more than 2 or 3 instances of raft damage a year. That's like a 1% chance. And it's usually down to the instructor's mistake. Look alive, come on, go, go, go.
Sit straight, don't lean. Everybody keep paddling. Peter, get a hold of yourself. Paddle, paddle, paddle. And some more. We can do it.
Don't fall over. Start paddling forward. There's a small rapid. Let's go faster. Faster, 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 faster. Steady. You're doing great.
We'll be right back.
Vladimir, first of all, I want to say thank you for an awesome yet somewhat nerve-wracking experience. I think my heart's still pounding. How did I do? I won't be offended.
For a first-time rafter, you did great. You obeyed all the commands exactly. We flipped, which does sometimes happen, although rarely. But it just added positive emotions.
It certainly did.
You've got a really immersive water experience and survived a Class 3 rapid called Moskovskaya Bochka.
Well, for me, that was pretty extreme, I'm not going to lie, but I'm sure for you, that was nothing. Tell me about your most extreme rafting experience.
I used to do a lot of adventure tourism, went on rafting trips. I acted as a guide on two Class 4 trips. It was high in the mountain and the rapids were more powerful. Here in Adygea, we have a granite canyon with Class 4 and 5 obstacles. I've rafted there 7 or 8 times, so that's my level of experience. Classes 4 and 5. Class 5 runs can only be attempted by large groups of well-trained experts.
Now, you go rafting all year round. How does the character of the river change depending on the season?
For 8 months in any given year, the water level is low. For 2 months, it's high. And for 2 months, normal. We go rafting all year round. Sometimes we get extreme floods, which happen maybe once a decade. Then we have to keep out of the water for 1 or 2 days. Otherwise, we even go whitewater rafting in winter when it's minus 15 degrees.
From the watery rapids now to the rocky cliffs. We swap our life jackets for harnesses and head deep into Mishakor Gorge.
So we have our harness, our helmet. What's the basic equipment you need to go canyoning, and what's better just left at home?
First and foremost, leave your doubts and fears at home. Ropes are essential, of course. You can't go canyoning without them. Even though it does include jumping off waterfalls, you shouldn't attempt it if the cliff or the waterfall are taller than 20 meters. So ropes, a harness, a helmet, carabiners, and thoroughly tested equipment are a must.
Well, I forgot to leave my nerves at home. Well, it sounds like I'm in good hands, Alexei. Shall we do this?
Let's go.
I don't know if I'm talking to the viewers or to myself, or if I'm distracting myself from the fact that I'm at least 100 meters up on a tiny ledge. Whew. Made it. I must admit that one of my phobias is descending into a cave, the cave getting narrower, and I get stuck there.
Has that ever happened here before? And what do you do in that situation?
It has never happened here, Peter. The crack here is not so narrow, and it allows large groups of up to 30, 40 people to pass here every day. Even a power lifter can get through. You and I will definitely not get stuck. And even if we did, experienced guides are always nearby and will rush to our aid.
Phew, let's do it then. Alexei, I guess canyoning is one of those sports where you're very much at the mercy of the elements. Or is it one of those things you can do all year round as long as you have the right clothes and equipment?
Professionals can go canyoning all year round. If you're a tourist who hires a guide, you'd probably want to do it in summer. Why? Because mountain rivers are pretty cold even during the summer months. It's also safer, the river volume is much lower and the climb goes much more smoothly overall. In winter, the water is very cold, you must wear a bulky wetsuit, you need much more equipment and a different kind of equipment, which also requires better preparation not only from the guide but from the tourist as well.
But for the professionals, I guess that the risk and the danger and the adrenaline is what appeals to them.
People choose extreme sports because of the associated risk. Risk gives them adrenaline. We're all live for adrenaline. There's a certain number of people who absolutely need adrenaline. And canyoning is just a sport that suits the needs of adrenaline junkies.
The best way to see Adygea, of course, is to soar above it like the eagles native to the region. And I know just the man to take us up there. Igor, let's start with the basics. What is a powered paraglider?
A powered parachute is an ultralight aircraft, which means it's below 495 kilos. This one weighs 115 kilos, so it's really light. Historically, paragliders came first. You had to go high in the mountains somewhere, put on a harness, get hooked to a parafoil, and jump. Like an eagle, you could circle in air currents, gain altitude, and fly high and far. However, people wanted to fly even without any mountains nearby, so they came up with motorized paragliders. A motorized paraglider is basically an engine you wear, like a backpack, and your feet serve as the landing gear. You do a short run, and off you go. And obviously, you land on your feet, too. Then powered parachutes came about. This is a two-seater. It accommodates the pilot and one passenger. In winter, you can replace the wheels with skis, and it allows you to fly high and far as well. You could say it's a tiny plane. It's very compact when folded. You can fit it into an SUV trunk or a cargo trailer.
And how difficult is it to fly? What sort of skills does a pilot need to control one of these in the air?
Naturally, you need training, but I think that powered parachuting, as well as paragliding, is very democratic. You can fly when you're 14, and there's no upper age limit. There are people in their 70s who still fly paragliders. Last year, we gave a ride to a Highlander who was 104 years old. He was listed in the Russian Book of Records. He walked here on his own 2 feet, and I flew him in this PPC in Kabardino-Balkaria.
I hope I'm that active at that age.
It's an advanced age, for sure.
Should we give it a go, then?
Sure.
Uh-huh.
Igor, I know that you also built powered paragliders. How does it feel when you first take to the sky in something that you've built yourself? Are you ever nervous at all?
Your heart jumps when you see the beauty around you. I love flying in the mountains. My first flights were unpowered, so I had to take off from a mountainous slope. It was quiet. It felt like some mysterious power picked you up and lifted you up in the sky, defying gravity itself. And I decided to call my club Gravity Game. You could say we play games with gravity. Words can't describe it. I'm sure you'll agree with me that you can say any number of words to describe flying, but you really need to try it if you want to know what it's about. I think I was excited that I did it. I've been flying for a long time. I got nervous during my first flights. But now I spend one-third of my life walking on the ground, one-third sleeping, and one-third in the air. I fly a lot.
Not many people can say that. In 2024, you went to the North Pole with Fyodor Konyukhov. It was freezing, extreme, and far. And you set a world record as well. What on earth made you agree to go on that expedition?
Like Fyodor, I love traveling. My travels and projects are all different. I couldn't even dream of having a North Pole adventure, but Fyodor likes to think big. After we met, one of his big ideas was to reach the North Pole on a PPC. It was a very difficult undertaking. The North Pole is an extreme destination. For starters, it's abstract. Right now, there's a road beneath us. There are distinctive landscape features. The pole is different, though. You can only rely on coordinates. When you get there, you have to keep reading your longitude and latitude and make adjustments every second. If you don't correct your course in time, you'll stray too far and never reach the pole. Another thing is the conditions above the North Pole are extreme. The air is very humid and cold. The first attempts to reach it by air ended in disaster because the aircraft would get covered in ice and crash. Icing was an issue for us as well. Thankfully, the weather conditions allowed the ice to melt. We traveled inside a thick layer of clouds, and an ice crust formed on our PPC, which kept getting heavier. Luckily, we got out of the clouds in time, which stops the ice formation. The ice began to melt, and we were able to continue. Our flight lasted 10 hours and 30 minutes. There were extremely windy conditions when we landed. The wind speed reached 10 to 13 meters per second. It is the limit for this type of aircraft. Our PPC bumped and jumped due to ice being dragged by the wind, damaging the wing beyond repair. We were happy to do it, though. We were so excited that we made it to the North Pole. And then we had to wait 24 hours for an icebreaker to come and get us.
Whoa. I can't even imagine the emotions you experienced.
They can't be put into words, same as with our emotions during this flight. But we were overwhelmed. It was one heck of a trip. As I said, I've been flying for a long time. I started jumping with a parachute when I was still at school, and I've been paragliding since 1992, more than 30 years. But I always try to make each flight a memorable experience. Projects like flying to the North Pole make these seemingly routine actions, like takeoff, flying, and landing, one-of-a-kind events. If you want to keep this experience fresh every time, you need to add an element of adventure to it. The polar expedition added a really unforgettable dimension, and it's something that would be hard to replicate. The Earth is big, though, so I think there are many more things that you can do without replicating anything.
You've already achieved so much, Igor. What's next? Where's your next expedition to?
One of my dreams is a round-the-world flight. As a first step, I flew 9,700 kilometers on a powered paraglider. So there's 31,000 kilometers to go to reach 40,000, which is the Earth's circumference. I'm on the right track. Now, to brush up on my English, and off I go. I also want our world to become more peaceful and hope that the conflicts and wars stop, which would be great for a round-the-world flight.
Well, I would help you with the English, Igor.
I'd also like to do a friendship flight over the Bering Strait from Russia to Canada. It is a small dream with global implications.